in the clutches of what we all in the clutches of, the 1%, the corporate world that runs the economy of this planet of ours and is doing so much harm to it and begins to undermine the political sovereignty and independence of nations. That's the point we're at. That's why we're facing such scandals and corruption with our political elite.
Ronnie Cashels, we have to leave it there. We thank That's you for being with impact. Us, joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa, former member of the National Executive Committee of the African National Congress, work with Nelson Mandela. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective.
Finally, the housing market is recovering. Sales and prices are up. But wait, home ownership is still going down. That's right. The banksters are at it again. This time, they've bought up 200,000 foreclosed homes, bundled them to sell as rental-backed securities. A new financial instrument is born, creating a new housing bubble. Join me, Linda Olson-Osterlund, on a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Laura Gottsdiener, author of How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. That's this Thursday at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
This Friday, on Positively Revolting, our guest will be renowned mythologist, psychologist, author, and storyteller Michael Mead. We'll be discussing Michael's essay, Gratitude and the Gift of Life, insights into the holiday season. So if you are interested in understanding soul and connection in the midst of consumer insanity, tune in Friday, December 13th, from 8 to 9 a.m. on KBOO, your community radio.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. This morning, I want to know what's on your mind. I've had a couple of things I want to talk about, but we're going to have an open conversation today. The number to call, of course, is 503-231-8187. So my list of things to talk about is the recent passing of Nelson Mandela. Two big items that are on the Portland City Council's agenda for next week. What's happening with R2D2, with buildings being proposed, and what's happening with that process. And I'd like to talk about the Multnomah County Central Committee had an election for an interim chair, I understand, a week or so ago. And they blew it, and they're having another election tonight at 6 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Committee meeting. And so I want to spend some time talking about that. But I think I want to start off, since Amy Goodman is in South Africa this morning, she was reporting on the fact that there are thousands of people waiting patiently to pay their respects to Nelson Mandela before he is laid to rest in his hometown. For me, as I started thinking about Nelson Mandela's death, it's kind of like the death of John F. Kennedy. Most people know where they were when they heard that Nelson Mandela had been released from prison. I remember I was living in Oakland at the time. There was a big rally at the Coliseum, and people came out and were really excited to know that he was leaving prison. As I've reflected on both the 27 years he spent in prison His 4 years as president of South Africa, as the first black president of South Africa, and his life since then, I can't help but be in awe of someone who could experience such brutality in their life, yet totally be all about love. And from no matter who he talked to, no matter where he was, it was all about the love of the people of South Africa and all the people, and trying to make opportunities available where they were not before. So for me, I'm in awe, probably in the same context as Dr. Martin Luther King, because I just, for me personally, I just can't imagine experiencing that kind of brutality, but yet still having this heart that's full of love and full of commitment to continue to just do this work. Rest in peace. Certainly at 95 years old, he's lived a long, long life. But it certainly makes you stop and wonder. I certainly can't take on those kind of characteristics. That's just not, it's not in my DNA. If somebody hits me, I'm going to try to knock them out. Has been my life philosophy. So it's wonderful to be able to acknowledge people that, in spite of all the difficulty, that they approach the solution from a position of love, and I think that's pretty cool. We have a caller on the line. Hello, Joanne. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO. How are you today?
Yeah, hello, Joanne. I just found out recently that they're going to turn our public housing buildings into Section 8 vouchers. And I don't know whether I heard Joe Uris on his program the other day say this, but I thought he had said, and I may be wrong, and I'll probably get corrected, that he doesn't think there'll ever be justice in the world. You know, that's what I've been feeling for a long time about life. And I also want to respond, and then I'll get off the air, and I don't want to respond, so it won't do any good. Last week, there was a new female caller that called into your program, and I listened to her and your response to her. And so this is very brief, and there's a lot more, but...
the one I was asking about here, you?
Here's what I have to say. I have been working a long time on healing myself. I cannot heal because this is just some of it, because of the glorifying and support of the people of our country for technology of all kinds, war, and money and power, and people's ongoing brainwash and the propaganda of their minds and spirits. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Joanne. I wanted to ask you if that was the woman that called to, that asked about how you were and whether you had supports around you. And I understand the whole thing about healing, but you have to heal yourself before you can kind of help heal the world. And I think that was the earlier conversation about Nelson Mandela. Certainly, if anybody had a right to be angry and a right to want retribution and hold people accountable for the horrendous way he was treated, I certainly think that Nelson Mandela had the right. He had the right to carry anger around for the rest of his days. And the fact that he didn't is, in my mind, a pretty remarkable thing that that says more about him as a person than the people who had actually brutalized him. One of the incredible things that happened in South Africa that I think helped was the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was appointed shortly after Nelson Mandela became president. And you may remember that it was about people acknowledging the harm that they had done and then having a forgiveness process that then prepared people to move on to the next steps, which is was the rebuilding of South Africa. And so it is. So for me, it's that might be one way to get people to a more loving, to a more holistic approach to how community change takes place. And if I relate what happened in South Africa way back then in the 1990s, to our struggles today for civil rights, I can say the piece that we continue to want to jump over is the whole truth and reconciliation process. Certainly with my work with police, I understand intimately that if you don't acknowledge any wrong, then there's no reconciliation to get to the next step. And so we end up stuck in, you did this, no, we didn't. You did this, no, we didn't. We end up stuck in this lack of acknowledgement of the harm that's been done to individuals and to the broader community. And so instead of actually saying, yes, harm has been done, now let's figure out where do we go from here, we end up saying, well, we just want to ignore what happened yesterday and let's start from today, which is ludicrous because you're never going to get to any full resolution to any community problems if you don't acknowledge the harm that's been done. If you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, Brian. Welcome to K-Book.
Hey, good morning, John. How are you?
I am very good. How about you?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
All right.
Good. I wanted to point something out, and you know, I didn't get to the other day, but you're a good one to do it with. The you know, Mandela was, you know, absolutely a beacon of light for everybody, and you know, I just want to say, you know, that he spent 27 years in solitary confinement.
Yes.
On Robben Island. Right. And we have gentlemen now who are approaching 40 years.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's asking, you know, where our Mandelas are, where our Martin Luther Kings are.
Yes.
They're in jail.
Yeah.
and you know, they are.
Yes.
And you know, I listen, you know, to prison radio on this station.
Prison Pipeline, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I hear these reports from prison, and this man who's been locked up for 40 years, you know, he's accused of murder that he did or didn't commit. I don't
know. Right.
But, you know, the point is, you know, his objective views, his opinions are great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I could just think of that man, you know, even now getting out. And you know, being able to at least be a force.
Right. Well, you know, Brian, you're going to love my program next week. The young man that I'm interviewing next week was on death row at age 18.
Right.
And spent 24 years on death row before he was released and then pardoned by the governor of Washington State. He's going to come on next week, and we're gonna talk about his story. You're going to love that program because this young man now is the regional president of the NAACP of the Pacific Northwest. So Oregon, Washington, and Idaho is where he does his work nowadays.
Well, without being patronizing Joanne to you or anybody else who's African, you know, the strength of African men and women are, you know, I mean, I think, you know, we should look at them. And you know, this is where our strength has come from, you know, through a lot of things, you know, in South Africa and America.
Yes.
And, you know, the Kennedys and all were the exceptions. But, you know, our strength has come from, you know, good, strong African men. I do have one more thing to say.
I'll say men and women, but go ahead.
Oh, men and women. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
No worry.
Well, you know, Bob had Rita.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Bob
That's
Marley
right.
had Rita Marley.
That's
and,
right. That's
you
right.
know, if it wasn't for Rita, he wouldn't have been Bob.
That's right.
But, you know, the bottom line goes with Joanne is, you know, Joanne has been through a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is portrayed in her commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. And you know what? Joanne makes some great points.
Yes.
And she is, above all, an extremely fair and kind and loving person. And I'll tell you something. If I can sit there in the afternoon on my newscast and listen to John Boehner, New Cambridge, and sift through their crap.
Right, right.
Listen, I'd rather sift through Joanne.
I heard
that. And anybody who has anything to say about Joanne, well, hey, look, you know what? Listen to her once in a while because she makes a lot of sense.
Yes, she does. And, you know, that's life experience, right? It's wonderful to me that she's still connected. She's still in community. And I love people, even with their struggles, who still want to be in community. Because
and I don't feel sorry for her. It's the character she's built.
Right.
And you know what? I don't feel sorry for her. I don't pity her because that's an insult. You know, I empathize with her. And sometimes my delivery's not so great.
Same here.
Anyway, Joanne, all love to everybody.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Have a great day. Brian reminded me that I wanted to remind you that tonight at the Rosewood Initiative Community Center on 162nd and Southeast Stark, starting at 6 p.m., will be a viewing of the Safe and Sound video, which is a all-female video crew who got a grant and did a documentary on police violence in Portland. This evening, we're going to have at least a half dozen human rights commissioners from the city of Portland participating and viewing a video and then having a community conversation about policing in Southeast Portland. You may hear and read constantly about the gang activity that's taking place in Outer East Portland, but that's not the experience of those of us who live in East Portland. And so we're going to be talking about this perception of crime as reported by police in that community, in that area, as well as really talking about how we as a community can take control of our community policing force. And so there is a Facebook page for that, Safe and Sound Video in Portland, on Portland Police. Just put it in your search engine. It'll pop up. But otherwise, it starts this evening at 6 p.m. at the Rosewood Initiative on 162nd and Southeast Stark. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Sherelle. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. And always thank you for your efforts to make things better.
Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up that fellow's comments on commending African people around the world, African people here in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Strong, beautiful people, and I'm just sending out a commendation. I have black ancestry myself, but that's not the reason why I'm doing it. I'm just saying honor to that. And additionally, I want to say honor to Joanne. I like listening to Joanne. I think Joanne thinks with her heart as mm-hmm. well as her head. Mm-hmm. Most people do not. Mm-hmm. Also, the idea of community is that if you really are community heart-minded person, then everyone can come into community.
Yes.
And I think that Joanne says to me when I listen to her a lot that she is a person that is happy to help, happy mm-hmm. to care, happy to share, and in my mind, that's extremely positive, and I do not always hear that so often in the commentary of the callers that come in to the line, and the attitude sometimes exposed, and mm-hmm. the lack of compassion which shows up in the judgment and the snootiness and the classism, and
mm-hmm.
I've walked a hard road like Joanne, who calls in. I would suppose that you've walked a hard road.
Oh, yeah,
it's
I have stories.
It's a hard road, and I think Joanne brings that forward, and I try to also.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your call, and I really love that Joanne is getting all this love today. It warms my heart to know that community members are stepping up to say, hey, you know, she's part of our community, and we love her, and we're glad that she is connected I miss her when she doesn't call for a while, because I'm like, have you heard from Joanne? Have you heard from Joanne? Because she does disappear every once in a while. But thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your call, and I appreciate the love that she's getting, because we all need to know that people out there love us, even if we've never met them. We just know that we love them because we feel a connection to them. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Have a fabulous day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. And so I'm going to move on a bit, but when you call, you can take me back if you'd like. I want to talk a bit about an upcoming city council agenda. Next week, you may remember that last month, the IPR, the Independent Police Review System that we have, the one that the Department of Justice called Byzantine and self-defeating, the auditor's office had a list of changes that they were proposing, and of course, everybody that's doing anything at the city is proposing it because the DOJ is making them do it. And the minor changes that she were moving forward to the city council that day, I was one of those. I think it was a 3.5-hour city council meeting that I participated in that day. And basically, the auditor and the IPR director, Constantine, didn't do a real effective job of actually building community support for the significant changes that the Department of Justice is recommending, is not recommending, is actually mandating that we fix within Portland Police Bureau. And so it did not pass that day. There was a lot of opposition. Primarily the community opposition was that the changes didn't go far enough, and it didn't seem to make sense to do this little tiny tinkering around the edges when the fairness hearing, based on the Department of Justice settlement agreement, has not been scheduled yet. And it would make more sense to make these fundamental statute changes after the fairness hearing, after the federal judge has ruled on whether or not he's accepting the settlement agreement and what changes he wants before we go to the city council and make these statutory changes. And so anyway, that's what should happen. But what is happening is that it's on the city council agenda for next week. As my work with the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, we've asked the mayor's office to hold off on having this vote because it doesn't make sense to actually tinker now and then come back in February and make the changes that the DOJ settlement agreement actually requires us to make. And so it's my hope that the rest of the city council will also share that perspective and hold off on that vote. The other vote that's coming up next week on the city council is more troubling, which is the Portland Police Association's contract will be up for ratification next week as well. What's troubling about the Portland Police contract is that there are some fundamental things that have to be changed that the community has been waiting for about two decades now. And one of the most key pieces, well, there are two. One of the most important pieces is eliminating the 48-hour rule. You may remember that in Portland Police contract, they don't have to actually talk to an investigator at the scene of a crime for 48 hours because they're too traumatized initially after a use of force event to actually provide a statement on scene. Even though the Department of Justice settlement agreement will require them to do just such. But the contract still has the 48-hour rule and still prohibits IPR investigators from directly questioning Portland police officers. These are two really big things that could have been, should have been changed in the contract. And the contract that's moving forward still has those pieces as they were in the last contract. And so in my mind, that contract should not be ratified by the Portland City Council, and the public should have an opportunity to weigh in on that. The other thing about the vote next week is that if this contract is voted in, there's some real concerns that the changes that the DOJ has said they want and the changes that the community has said they want will be impacted by this contract that basically makes the status quo the status quo. And so it would be my hope, again, that they wait until we go back in front of the federal judge on the 19th of December when he sets the date for the fairness hearing, that we have him answer the question about what changes could be made based on this new contract. So those are some of the things that are coming up next week on the Portland City Council agenda. And we have a caller on the line. We have Rob. Hello, Rob. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to start and say I love hearing Joanne on the phone because she seems to care a lot about everybody, and that's pretty great. You know, if anything, she almost cares too much about everyone else, it seems like, which is kind of hard on her.
This is true.
But my other thing is I just wanted to mention with Nelson Mandela, the Peace and Reconciliation Committee, definitely very amazing and to look at and to talk about wrongs that have been done. It probably was maybe a little bit easier for him to find that peace in his heart or to keep the peace in his heart, because once he did come out of jail, he was basically a celebrity. You know, he really didn't need to, you know what I mean? Like he could move on with his life in a pretty good way. He wasn't just let out of jail and then no one cared about him and, you know, right. No one was watching over him, which probably makes it a little bit easier because he had the backing and the love of so many people,
right?
You know, which probably makes it easier for your heart to love other people also. And then I just wouldn't mind seeing a few more shows. I've caught a bunch of the KBOO ones since he passed, but I'd like to hear a few more, like The Way Democracy Now ended today with the Faustian deal that the ANC had kind of made with private industry, and see a little bit more of how South Africa is doing now, because what was it last year or was it this year that many of the miners were shot
right
by the police? So I think it'd be interesting to look back at what was done, because it seems like that's kind of the state of so many of our countries now is private industry.
Yes.
The deals we've made with them, and we're all going backwards.
Well, I mean,
it seems like.
I think you raise a really good point, and I certainly agree. I think anybody in South Africa would tell you that it's not anywhere near what it can be yet. But I am sure that some fabulous programmer here at KBOO will be bringing that up, because I do think it's important. Just like in the U.S., I mean, it's so easy for us to pretend that we somehow embrace people from around the world and that we are just this melting pot of love and, you know, appreciation. You can say that if you actually don't live in the United States, or if you live such a privileged life that you have a lot of resources at your disposal. But if you're not in those categories, we certainly cannot call this a country that embraces immigrants or refugees or anybody. I mean, if you get here, you know, man, it's hard.
If we even embrace our own, actually, and that's what it seems good to learn, is that how is South Africa doing? How are we doing that we've all dealt with private industry like the saviors?
Well, you know, I think one of the most interesting things about what happened in South Africa, which is kind of unfortunate, is so you get people who have been oppressed for a lot of years, well over three decades, right? And then you move those people into positions of power, right? And what those people want is now they want the political trappings that power visualizes. Which means, you know, they want the fancy cars, they want the big houses, they want, you know, the nice stuff. And then, so what you've done is replace one group of leadership that's corrupt, that's singly focused on their own personal wealth, with a new set of leadership that has that same kind of mindset, right? Because it's like, now it's my turn, so therefore I'm going to get everything I can get out of the process. And I've heard I've heard stories about just how that's worked in South Africa. And I will say it's worked exactly like it did in the United States of America, because when African Americans, you know, couldn't vote and couldn't run for office, couldn't serve in office, and then all of a sudden you had a class that could. They could run, they could serve, and what we find now is that African Americans are just as easily corruptible as white Americans when they sit in these positions of power, right? And they're just like everybody else and trying to acquire as much power and wealth as they can for themselves.
Yeah, the old power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts.
Absolutely. Yep, that's absolutely true. So, I'm sure that we're going to be doing more on that, but I don't want us to lose focus on the fact that we could examine South Africa with a microscope, but if we're not examining ourselves and our own values and how they play out in our day-to-day world, then we're fooling ourselves.
And I definitely think we need to examine everything. And it's interesting that so much time has been spent on whether Mandela was a communist member.
Right.
I know. He says he wasn't.
Right.
The people that are now saying it, he's dead. That's
right.
Not really fair. So it doesn't really matter. Let's move on from that and talk about, his other ideas and things.
And let's also not try to whitewash his life, right? He was an armed rebel, right? He tried peaceful, peacefully nonviolent means, and it didn't work, right? And so he was part of an armed opposition to the government, right? Let's not, just like we do with Dr. Martin Luther King, we really try to whitewash history and make it sound like, these people were like saints that came down from above and just kind of floated with us for a little while and then they left again, right?
Yeah.
We have to talk about the whole man and all of his experiences, because they all made him this incredible man that was so capable of forgiveness. And I have to say I'm in awe of that, because I can't get there in my own mind. I have too much mind, I guess, in it. And if I took my mind out and just left my heart in it, maybe. But I can't get there myself. But
I can't imagine how any of these guys, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, how they did it, period. I think about, how did they do all these things.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. I'm lucky to get out of bed and get moving, get to work in the morning.
I'm lucky, to not become a stock-raving lunatic screaming in people's faces all day long, right?
Well, yeah. And
at the injustices.
How to keep standing up again after being knocked down over and over and over again.
I think that's really one of the most powerful messages that we get, right? Because, 27 years in solitary confinement would break most people. Most people would not be able to have intelligent conversation after spending that much time in that kind of situation, right?
I can't imagine still standing up with just the threat of prison over me.
Exactly.
Want to stand up. I would be too afraid to go to prison in the first place.
Right.
I'd probably be quiet.
Right. Well, I don't think I would be quiet. I just think I'd be killed early.
Yeah. Well, what was the guy that got out of Angola? Wasn't it Angola? And he was in 40 something years in solitary confinement. And
yes.
He still came out, and he still sounded like a really nice, optimistic guy. I was like, wow, how are you not dead or completely crazy or completely bitter and angry and hateful,
It's
amazing.
Right. Well, you also should be listening next week, because the gentleman I'm going to talk to next week, as an 18-year-old, went on death row in Seattle prisons. And a couple of years ago was pardoned by the governor of Washington State. And now he serves as the regional president for the NAACP Oregon, Washington, Idaho chapter. So I'm going to have a nice conversation with him next week, because, again, here's another example of someone that I just can't imagine at 18 being on death row, spending 24 years in prison, and then being out and not just functioning, but effectively functioning and organizing your broader community. So
it takes a lot of internal strength. I'll try to catch that one for sure.
Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate your call today.
And thank you. I appreciate your show.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Does someone want to call me and tell me about the Multnomah County Democratic Central Committee's election that happened, I believe, a couple of weeks back. And so here's the frame. This is what I know. I only know this because I read the Scanner News Group. And so what happened was there was an election. Apparently, the chair of the Multnomah County Democratic Central Committee resigned to become a state representative because Mike Denbro took Jackie Dingfelder's seat, who resigned to go to work for Charlie Hales. So the chair of the Democratic Party Central Committee is a core piece of the campaign apparatus that gets Democrats elected throughout Multnomah County. So there was an election a couple of weeks ago. There was a former chair who ran but didn't think it was an election. She just thought that she was going to come and it was just going to be an affirmation of her taking on that role again until after the 2014 election cycle. My understanding is that there was a challenger. Her name is Lakita Elliott. You may know her name because she works for the Urban League. She's an organizer with the Urban League of Portland and has been very active with the Democratic Party over the last election cycle and I think before then. And so anyway, she decided to run. And she's a young African-American woman. She's under 40, I know. She's African-American. And she won the election. So, yay! You know, you think, okay, this is a Democratic Party, right? There are two candidates. Election was held. The majority voted for Lakita Elliott. And so you would think, okay, that's the end of that story. Let's move on. Well, apparently some people got upset about the election results and then started challenging the election process. My understanding is that there were requests made to both the Secretary of State to make a ruling, as well as to the Multnomah County Elections Office to make a ruling. And both of those punted back to the Multnomah County Central Committee. This sounds like I'm discussing a Republican election. It certainly sounds like Republicans were running this election process. But believe it or not, it was not. It was the Democrats. And so there were challenges filed, and all of a sudden, a new election has been scheduled because some of the precinct committee people who voted to elect Lakita were not registered by the Secretary of State. So they were voted in that same day that the election was held. And so they weren't, quote unquote, certified yet to be precinct committee people. Therefore, they supposedly were not eligible to vote in that election. And so tonight at 6 p.m. at Multnomah County Senior Center in Hollywood District, there will be another election for the Multnomah County Central Committee chair position. And my understanding is that Karen Hansen is not running again. Carla Hansen is not running again, who was the interim that thought she was going to be elected. But we also understand that there may be new people that will also be running tonight. The question is, so do we really need another election? Apparently, it sounds like we're going to have one, whether we need one or not. I guess the question that I have is, who is the Democratic Party of Oregon? And does the Democratic Party of Oregon really believe that they need new blood in order to revitalize their party? And do they need to be embracing people of color and young people into the Democratic Party? It seems kind of ludicrous to be asking this question about the Democratic Party, since we always ask this question about the Republican Party, because the assumption is that the Democratic Party is more inclusive, more representative, et cetera, et cetera. However, the outcome of this election tonight will decide whether or not that is so, whether or not the Democratic Party really is a party that is rethinking how they engage and embrace with a broader community. I think it's kind of insulting that to elect the first African-American woman that that would be the only time in the Democratic Party history that an election would be challenged and we would be redoing an election with such short notice. I'm concerned that people don't know that another election is happening, that they won't show up, and that the people that show up will show up to represent the status quo. So if you are a precinct committee person and you are free tonight, not at my video presentation, not somewhere else, I would encourage you to be at Multnomah County Senior Center in Hollywood and actually participate in that election and support Lakita, since she has already been elected once by her constituency. So what's coming up today on KBOO? At 9 on Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell looks at the real meaning of December 25th in the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on A Deeper Look, the topic is how Wall Street has turned housing into a dangerous get-rich-quick scheme again. At 10 is Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andrea. At 10:15, Flashpoint features excerpts from the annual Indigenous Peoples Sunrise Gathering from The Rock, Alcatraz Island in San Francisco, recorded on Thanksgiving morning. At 11 on Between the Covers, we hear about the secret language of color. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. Want to thank you again, KBOO listeners, and thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you missed our pledge opportunity, you can still become a member by going to kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar today. If you want to join the conversation in our last 15 minutes, give me a call at 503-231-8187. That is the number to call. And we've been talking about just a few things that are in the news. I want to talk about R2-D2 before I leave. It is my understanding that the mayor has identified, the mayor working with developers downtown, has identified a warehouse space for R2-D2 to move in to. You may remember that, I guess it was about 4 months ago now, Commissioner Amanda Fritz had negotiated an agreement with R2-D2, which is Right to Dream 2. I'm sorry if I'm talking in acronyms. Right to Dream 2. And they were going to move to a publicly owned space right downtown. Some developers and downtown business folks got a little upset that the city was actually going to move this homeless camp onto another downtown location. Didn't want to see those homeless people downtown. And so they put pressure on the mayor. The mayor took R2-D2 negotiations from Commissioner Amanda Fritz, and now his office has taken over that investigative process. And supposedly they've come up with a plan for a warehouse. And I think that there's mixed reactions from the homeless community about whether or not that's a good idea. I mean, definitely this last week or so has taught us that being inside is better than being outside when the temperature is in the teens at night. However, there's some real concern that out of sight will mean out of mind. Also, the city will have to pay about $10,000 a month in order to keep R2-D2 in this warehouse for a year. So the commitment is only for a year. The commitment is that the city is going to pay this cost, which at $10,000 a month. And so many in the homeless community are wondering, well, if we're going to spend $10,000 a month, is there a more effective way to spend that $10,000 a month to actually help people get off the street? And those conversations are still taking place. They're happening behind closed doors. I don't believe there's a public process where the public gets to weigh in. But I think the public should be weighing in at the mayor's office and encouraging him to find a solution that's not a temporary stopgap, but actually a solution that will help transition people from being on the street to to having a place to stay, having a home, having a real place to stay. So you can give me a call at 503-231-8187 and tell me what you think about that. This has been dragging on for a while. You may remember this has been going on since Randy Leonard was on the Portland City Council when he was in a tug of war with the landowner of where R2-D2 is currently located, down at Chinatown, at the gate at the entrance to Chinatown. So this has been going on for quite a while. And I think this week really makes it important. I've seen a lot of positive messages about community members going both to Dignity Village, which, as you know, is off of 33rd, taking donations of hot food and clothing and socks and blankets, just trying to help people survive these really frigid temperatures that we've been having. And since we're unaccustomed, us here in Oregon, to really, really cold temperatures, it's even more important for those of us who have a warm place to actually do what we can to help support people who are not that fortunate. And it's been wonderful. I've seen a lot of people just on their own just saying, you know, I stopped by Dignity Village and I took a hot meal, or I stopped by R2-D2 and took blankets and gloves and sleeping bags and those kind of things. And so I just want to say that's really important. And that's a community coming together to support their own. I also want to remind folks that I mentioned a little bit earlier that on December 19th, we are waiting for Judge Michael Simon to give us directions on the community fairness hearing that will feed into the settlement agreement with Portland Police and the Department of Justice. And so it is our hope and our thinking that this fairness hearing will probably take place in February, either late January or mid-February. But by the 19th, we will know. So next week, we will know from the judge kind of what that process will be. And it's my hope that the community will participate in these education opportunities that will be coming up as soon as we know when the fairness hearing is, to actually learn about what's in the settlement agreement. I wonder if our city council has actually read the investigation that the Department of Justice did last year or completed last year. So the community probably hasn't read the report. Probably hasn't read the details of the settlement agreement that was negotiated by the last Portland City Council, and probably are unaware of the budgetary implications of this five-year contract with the Department of Justice, which is the settlement agreement. And so our goal will be to host a series of community education forums to help people understand what's in those documents, because most people won't read those reports, to understand what's in it, to understand what's missing, and to understand what, and then to have input into what the community thinks the changes need to be to that settlement agreement, so that it actually addresses the findings that the Department of Justice had when they said Portland police officers do, in fact, use excessive force with people who have mental illness or who are perceived to have mental illness. Therefore, because of that, we have this settlement agreement that we're going to have to live with for the next 5 years. And there's a lot of pieces to that. And right after the 19th, I will have a program that we will talk specifically about what Judge Michael Simon's directive is to the Portland community, when the fairness hearing will take place, what the process will be for community members to get their information into Judge Simon. Judge Simon has already said he will take video testimony. He'll take emails, letters. He'll take people coming into the courthouse. But since we know the fairness hearing will probably happen between 9 and 5, Monday through Friday, at the federal courthouse downtown, it is unlikely that all the community members who want a voice in this process will be able to be there that particular day. And so as part of a community effort, we're going to do a series of community forums and then help people either write out testimony, videotape their testimony, or prepare to give their testimony at the official fairness hearing that Judge Michael Simon will call. And so we're looking forward to that process moving forward, but we also are with the caveat that we address the issues that are in the collective bargaining agreement with Portland Police Association prior to having the fairness hearing, because it doesn't make any sense at all to have a hearing so that the community for the first time can have a voice into the settlement agreement and not actually incorporate the community's concerns, expectations, and recommendations into that final document. And I think, quite frankly, that it will be a challenge because I don't think the city of Portland wants to make any changes at all to the agreement. It's clear that the Department of Justice doesn't want to make any changes at all to the agreement because in their minds, they have behind closed doors devised the best settlement agreement on the planet, and no one else could do better than what they've already done. But if you read the details, you would probably be like me and not agree that they've done an adequate job of addressing the corrective action that has to take place within Portland Police Bureau. And I say that because even till this day, there has been no acknowledgement by Portland Police Bureau that they've done anything wrong. But yet we're on course to spend $26 million to fix a problem that they don't acknowledge exists. And so that actually takes me back to where I started the program with Nelson Mandela and the fact that with his death this week, we are really reminded of the power of love and compassion and empathy and how that can move a nation if you do it right. And when we talked about Nelson Mandela, we talked about the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions were a vehicle to start moving South Africa in the direction that, though it's not there yet, and let's face it, they've had a lot less time than we've had to get it right, but they're not where they want to be yet, not by a long shot. We are also not where we want to be yet, not by a long shot. We also need to acknowledge that harm has been done in the Department of Justice. Certainly acknowledge that in the investigation that they did. Harm has been done to our community. The harm was done by police officers who are sworn to protect and serve us. Our opportunity to fix that is coming up very fast. And once it gets here, we will be stuck with the results of those efforts, either good or bad, and we'll be stuck with those efforts for 5 years as we work through the settlement agreement once it's been filed with the federal court. And we have a caller on the line. Hello, Sean. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
I'm just calling. I want to make a quick comment because I know there's not much time, but I just wanted to speak kind of to everything you were just saying real briefly, and that is that when it comes to community, that for the people to keep in mind that, yeah, the strength, the community among the public is really important under what you're saying, because we have to remember that there is also a separate community of government and a separate community of police and so forth, and the interests that they represent do not necessarily represent the community of the people. So the sooner the people really realize how strong community is,
yes,
then more power you have up against that.
That's absolutely true, and that's exactly what it's going to take. Thank you so much.
Well, and I want to make one more point.
Okay.
And that's quickly that in order for community to be able to do that, that the more important it is to understand that things like poverty and helplessness and so forth, that the more that people read the Bill of Rights and the more that people understand the Constitution, then they'll be able to more use the power that is being used against them to be able to stand up for themselves and get equality out of it.
Thank you. I excellent statements, both. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Great way to ease out of this program. Thank you. We have another caller. Hello, Reggae Bob.
Reggae Bob.
How are you today?
Fine, fine, fine. How is yourself?
I am wonderful. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And the wonderful K-Boot listeners, I like your show today. You're covering a lot of topics, but if I could just throw in 2 cents. Tuesday night, this past Tuesday, I went down to Oregon State Penitentiary, invited by the Brothers of Uhuru Sasa, and their monthly meeting. They did Kwanzaa this week.
Uh-huh.
And we had a nice celebration of Kwanzaa. And I just want to remind folks that the people who are incarcerated to stay strong, and if you have someone who is incarcerated or in prison now, be sure you get something to them this holiday season. Let them know that they're loved and they're missed. That is, I think, the most important thing that people need on the inside. They need to know that they're loved and cared for and not forgotten. So when they come out, they'll be productive citizens like they want to be.
Thank you so much for that, Reggae Bob.
Thanks,
you are so correct. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a great holiday. I think Reggae Bob was absolutely right. But, you know, the whole idea of truth and reconciliation, many people who are incarcerated have broken family bonds that they will need to heal. And that healing process, you know, can happen while they're still incarcerated, can happen when they get out. But the most important thing I hope people remember is that 97% of the people we send to prison come back. And we as a community should ask ourselves, who will be coming back to our community? Have we done all we can as a community to prepare them to come back and re-enter society and then become a productive member of that society? And the short answer is no, we don't. We give people a bus ticket back to their home county. We used to give them $35. I don't even know if we give them that anymore. And then we say, go home, get a job, report into your parole or probation officer. Oh, and if you have outstanding child support, you need to pay that. You have outstanding court fines, you need to pay that. And while you're doing all that, you're going to need to pay to be supervised by my office. And so you give somebody $35 and a bus ticket and a long list of things that they have to do in order to not come back into the correctional facility, you find out just how difficult that is for anybody. And somebody without a support system in place, it is almost impossible. So it's not a surprise that some people end up going back to prison. What's surprising is that many, many more don't, that they get out, they find a way to be productive in spite of all the barriers that we put in place to try to prevent that from taking place. But that's another program for another day, for another time. But I so appreciate Reggae Bob, because this holiday season, it's important to acknowledge and to get away from the stigma. I mean, there's a lot of stigma attached to incarceration. I haven't figured out yet whether it's more stigmatizing than being labeled having a mental health issue or being labeled an ex-felon. But both of those are stigmatizing labels that actually limit people's ability to be productive in our community. And a lot of times through no fault of their own. It's just because of the label that people have these perceptions of who they are and how they will respond in our community. So we covered a lot today. I am Joanne Hardesty, and that music means that my time is up. I will see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. And thank you very much, Steve, as always.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitters gold. After story had never been.
Don't give up the fight.
And good morning from KBOO Portland. A busy Thursday on the Mighty Boo. Coming up in a half hour on A Deeper Look, host Linda Olson Osterlin interviews journalist Laura Gottesdiener about her article, How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. At 10, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features excerpts from the annual Indigenous Peoples Sunrise Gathering from the Rock, Alcatraz Island in San Francisco, recorded on Thanksgiving morning. At 11 today on Between the Covers, color experts Joanne and Ariel Ekstut talk about their new book, The Secret Language of Color. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, underground cartoon writer Dennis Eichhorn tells the wild stories that have inspired books such as The Legend of Wild Man Fisher and the newly published Dennis P. Eichhorn's Real Good Stuff. He is joined in the studio by his collaborating artists, Pat Moriarty and J.R. Williams. That's all coming up this morning, but first, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell looking at the real meaning of December 25th, that is, and the news you're not supposed to know. That is all coming up next on KBOO.
Finally, the housing market is recovering. Sales and prices are up. But wait. Home ownership is still going down. That's right. The banksters are at it again. This time, they've bought up 200,000 foreclosed homes, bundled them to sell as rental-backed securities. A new financial instrument is born, creating a new housing bubble. Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, on A Deeper Look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Laura Gottesdiener, author of How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. That's this Thursday at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
Every year, a diverse and eclectic group of musicians and dancers come together for one night for a performance which celebrates and strengthens Portland's experimental music and performance arts scene, Untoward. Untoward is an annual benefit show for the Creative Music Guild. This year's lineup includes Grammys with Noah Bernstein and Dan Sutherland, Kayon Gaskin and Noelle Stiles, Dragging an Ox Through Water, Eternal Tapestry, and KBOO's 2013 Artist-in-Residence, Marissa Anderson. Untoward 2013 will take place this Saturday night, December 14th, at the Secret Society Ballroom, located at 116 Northeast Russell Street in Portland. Doors are at 8 and the show begins at 9. Your attendance will help support the work of the Creative Music Guild. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Untoward 2013.